Aquarius, and welcome to String Theory, your 2024-25 reading from Planet Waves. I'm Eric Francis, your astrologer forever or for the next hour. And I'm here back in the Planet Waves office at last. I took a little break from here to get a change of scenery to record the other video, and now recording another method of video. And this is the new era of video readings for Astrology Studio. I'm sorry, I only have my tinted reading glasses with me at the moment, so I will occasionally peer through them so that, you know, I'm not wearing sunglasses. I'm wearing rose-colored reading glasses. Historically, Astrology Studio has been a straight read of the charts for the coming year. And I did that for 12 years and thought, all right, 12 years, that's a long time. Time for a change. And so the change I thought to do was, particularly starting with Capricorn last month, was to prepare Capricorns for Pluto and Aquarius by reviewing all that had happened in the past so many years. I'm not sure how far back I went. In this reading, I'm going to go back to 1962, just in case you were, born in 1942 and were running around, you know, having fun in the early 60s. And take this through the present moment. The idea is that from studying transits, past events, you have a concept of the shape of time, and you also have a concept of how your astrological chart works when the energy is turned up. And in an astrology chart, the energy is turned up by transits. That's how we measure the movement of energy through an astrology chart. And there are a number of ways to read transits. And because I'm not working with your birth chart, I'm working with your solar chart. And I did a fairly long wrap on Substack the other night on how to work with your solar chart and what the connection is to your natal chart. And I will make sure that audio gets put here, but it's on my Substack at planetwaves.eu. That is the shortcut to the Planet Waves Substack, planetwaves.net, not Chiron Return. And this thing with Capricorn, I thought, worked pretty well. People had interesting responses, and the way that I got into this is because I did my first reading back in 1995, an astrology reading. I'd done tarot card readings, many of them, and rune readings and different things, but I did my first astrology reading, and very, very first client. Every astrologer has the story of their first client. And I would say something and the client said, no, that's not true. And I would say another thing and the client would say, no, that's not true. And then I said another thing and the whole reading was, no, that's not true. And maybe she was just giving me a hard time. But I thought, I've got to have a better way to do this. It's got to be a better approach here. So I thought, all right, I'm going to use what I learned from learning my own chart, which was to look at past transits. I mean, and the way that happened was, early on, I was reading Barbara Hand Clow's book, Chiron, Rainbow Bridge Between the Inner and the Outer Planets. And she said, the following are important transits. And I was working with an astrologer named Dave Rell, a bookstore guy with a computer program, and he sent me my transits, and one of them was June 1st, 1986. And that was the day that I graduated university. And it was a big, big time in my life, more so, I think, than most, you know, ordinary graduation, wear a cap and gown and all that. So therefore, I started to get into studying people's transits, and I've worked with somewhere between 1,000 and 2,000 clients, asking them the story of their transits. And I still do it to the current day in the first session. Even if it's only one session, I'll check four or five of their past transits just to get a sense of how their chart works when you turn the juice up by adding transiting planets. So this reading comes with a couple of things. One is it comes with a worksheet that looks like this. Well, it's a PDF. And what I'm suggesting you do is print it and get a notebook or some paper that looks like this, and then use a pencil that looks like this, or even maybe a pen. Those will look like this. The pen looks like that. And take notes, make it your own. Take charge, take possession. Go to astro.com, cast your chart. I don't care how little astrology you know. If you've gotten this far, you're listening to me right now, you have some organic inherent interest in astrology, possibly instigated by me and by others, and people telling you interesting things, and letting the tools be present in the environment. That's why all of my readings come with usually two forms of the chart. I'm here to bring people in to astrology so that you get the most out of it. And we live in a time when there are not very many growth tools. Nobody's really going to therapy. We now all know that SSRIs are bullshit. They don't cure anything. They don't heal anything. Serotonin uptake has nothing to do with depression. And astrology is available. It has been available in its current form for about 2,400 years, though in our time, astrology has a psychological bent to it. And of course, we know more. We have many, many more planets to work with. And one of them is Chiron. So your reading comes with this tool, with this tool, and the this and it I've included a blank wheel. So you're going to go to astro.com and cast your chart, or you're going to click on my thing for $33. I'll send you a chart set. It's very nice. Many, many formats of your chart and different tools and blank wheels and satires from the old days and fun things and planet waves, postcards, and all this stuff, but mostly your natal and your progressed in several different formats and blank wheels, and you will get started. All you need is a pencil and your brain. Okay, so the other thing included with this reading is I've included Planets in Motion 2022. I did not have a chance to redo this book for 2023. It's too late for 2024. Maybe I'll redo it for 2025. It was very popular on Planet Waves, and I've included it. And there's all kinds of introductory material that tells you about transits. Transits are where it's at in astrology. The natal chart is totally overemphasized. And the natal chart is made relevant by transit events. We'll get into those in a second. And so Planets in Motion is a book of 2022 transits. Even though things have shifted in 2 years and the signs are different, the inherent meaning of the transits remains the same, but the context shifts a little. For example, Planets in Motion 2022 talks about Saturn return in Pisces, sorry, Aquarius, because that was going on now. Currently, Saturn is in Pisces, so we would have to reinterpret that for Saturn return in Pisces. But it's not that different. It's going to be like 75% overlap. And then what changes by changing the sign of the event is meaningful, but you can fill in a lot of that. And I understand how complicated astrology is. I mean, look at this thing. Right. I mean, I've got like 30 planets in this chart. I use many others, but you don't need to do too much with astrology to get to the level of riding the bicycle of astrology. It doesn't mean you're going to ride to California. It doesn't mean you're going to be able to cross the Rocky Mountains yet. But if you can ride to school, if you can ride down the block, I mean, that's it, right? Remember your first bike ride? You rode down the block. Wow. You went somewhere under your own power quickly. Look, it's not long after that that you're going to ride your bike to work or maybe to Montreal or Washington, D.C., as I did when I was a kid. So You want to ride the bike. And as Steve Jobs said, the computer is a bicycle for the mind. And I would say, good call, Steve. And it looks like you studied Marshall McLuhan. That's why Mac is so powerful. But astrology is a bicycle for the mind. You can get a lot of value, a lot of power out of astrology, and learn about yourself and understand things about your life path and have a sense that there is some rhyme, reason, and symmetry to your growth journey. Now, I have no idea how long this is going to go. I'm going to go straight through. I guess I'm about, Zoom doesn't tell you how long you've been recording. I'm recording into a Zoom file, by the way, to save having all the apparatus of the planet and have my nice mic, my big magnet. May go on for a while, so pause, think, reflect. We'll put the audio separate so you can, you know, drive in your car and use it as a brainwashing tape. Okay, let's go. So this is your current solar chart. And what I'm going to be studying as we go through this are transits to what are called the angular houses. This is Aquarius. You can see that because it's got Aquarius there. Pluto's there, look, and the number one is there. That means it is the first house or first place in this discussion. Or said another way, it's the reference sign. It doesn't matter why you're reading for Aquarius. Maybe you've got the sun there. Maybe you've got Chiron there. Maybe you've got the moon there. Maybe you're born with Aquarius rising. Most of you are Aquarius sun. Great. That's the reference sign. And we'll work with that. And it's all an experiment. This part of astrology is scientific. This is about actual astronomical objects in their place. We know how many miles away they are. We know how many degrees they move a day or arc minutes they move a day. All of these points, with the exception of three in this chart, orbit the sun. The three that don't are deep space points. I use them for reference to kind of, you know, you live in Boston and you know that you're on the East Coast. So that's kind of like why I put the galactic center in and the great attractor into the chart. But when it comes to the application of astrology to life, it is a much more fluid kind of a thing. It is much more easygoing. It is not so much about the precision of the events, but a kind of a beautiful symmetry and synchronicity of events that then hints at the fact that there's something larger going on for you, that there's something your existence is part of something. And now some people don't need this. Some people think they don't need it. But the reality is that we are not these little individual atoms to spat it around. We exist in community with each other. We exist in a greater or lesser degree of harmony with the cosmos. And astrology is about the connection between the two. And by the way, I do not think any of this is caused by the planets, anything that happens in your life. I think that the planets are a kind of a meter, no more than the speedometer in your car is making you go 75 miles an hour. It's not, the engine isn't, your foot on the gas pedal is, but the speedometer is telling you how fast you're going. Your GPS is telling you, well, where you are. But people listen to their GPS and they're trying to get to Kingston, and sometimes they wind up in Connecticut. Congratulations, you've arrived. All right, I'm going to be focusing on transits to the angular houses. I was in the middle of that and I interrupted myself somehow. So we got as far as Aquarius, the reference sign. When Aquarius is the reference sign, Taurus is very important. That's 90 degrees away. And Leo is very important. That's 180 degrees away. And Scorpio is very important. That's 270 degrees away. Then the planet comes back if you live long enough, like 160 years or 29. And so I'm mainly emphasizing in this reading houses 1, 4, 7, and 10. The houses that deal with self and one's relationship to the world, family and security, one's home, one's relationships, including marriage partnerships and business partnerships, and one's professional activities, one's career. These four houses tell a large part of the story of love and work. And there's other ways to extrapolate, but that's what you do when you cast your chart and you look at your chart and you want to know more about your approach to work as a factor of well-being or sense of purpose rather than taking action. Then you look at the sixth house. Now, there are five important transits to look at in the course of a lifetime when you're looking at transits, and whether you've had them depends on how old you are. So the first one, though there are others younger, the kind of first transition into adulthood is called the Saturn return, and that usually happens at age 29 to 30. And most of you have had that. And the question is, what were you doing age 29 to 30? I suggest beginning these journal entries with your address at the time, because the address provides a setting, a little map to consciousness, and then you describe your circumstances at the time, and then the events at the time. So my approach is to go from the general to the specific, rather than from the specific to the general. So we begin with what was happening, then we go to what happened. These transits apply to all signs, all age groups, all eras in history. Chiron, not so much. Okay, so Saturn return, first Saturn return, age 29, 30. Pluto square Pluto happens in one's mid-30s, about age 35 to 36. And note, the Pluto square is getting later and later because Pluto is going slower and slower. Kids born now are going to have their Pluto square when they're about 65, whereas I, for example, had my Pluto square at around age 35. That's how much Pluto is slowing down as it gets further from the sun. Next, big one, Uranian opposition, age 43 to 44. This is when Uranus, which has an 84-year orbit, reaches the halfway point. So really that's more like 42 to 44. The thing says 43 to 44, but it takes a while to work out. Depending on your chart, you might get an early start to it, but early to mid-40s is the Uranian opposition. Very important transit. Like the Chiron, like the Saturn return, it is a find yourself transit and a personal reinvention transit. Saturn return is more like you find your sense of responsibility. You are hopefully starting to feel like an adult. You make some commitments and you embark on your work. The Pluto square is there if you miss your Saturn return, but at least it was there for people our age. Now the Pluto square happens late, and so we need to find other transits in the mid-30s that are catch-up points if one misses one Saturn return. How do you know you've missed your Saturn return? You don't like going to work. In other words, you have a job that you don't like going to. By the time you're 30, you should have found something that you like to do every day. So, and do be doing it. And if you it's not your favorite thing in the world to do, then you at least appreciate the fact that you're doing it and you know how to do it pretty well. And so with that one main requirement, there is a catch-up point, or there was in the mid-30s, called the Pluto square. So I don't know what to do about that anymore. The Pluto square was very handy for doing readings with people who were like 33 years old and they hate their job and they're mad at their parents and they're in a relationship they don't like and they didn't make their changes in their early 30s or late 20s, rooibos, or late 20s, there was another chance. Okay, next. So Chiron return happens at age 50 to 51. Now, there's a lot of Chiron transits, and the problem with Chiron transits is that they come at very different ages. Kind of like Pluto square now is happening to people at people born today are going to have it at about age 60. There are some times in history when people have their Chiron first square at age 7. For example, if you were born in the late 1980s, or if you were born in the mid 1960s, you have your Chiron first square at age approximately 22. So there's no way to generalize that, though there's a nifty table in Chiron Rainbow Bridge between the inner and the outer planets. Probably worth plagiarizing that and putting it up on the website. Let me see if I can get that Chiron transit chart from Barbara Handclough's book. It's like a very simplified ephemeris. But everyone has their Chiron return at age 50, 51. And it's often a big time. It is an entry into elderhood. It is a time of kind of there's often a healing crisis of some kind. Some major transition happens at that time. And the other Chiron transits are important because they will tell you they'll tell you what your life leading up to that transit was about. The Chiron transits all tend to work as a group. They tend to work as a pattern. They work as a pattern. All right. Finally, second Saturn return, age 59 to 60. So the Saturn has a 29-year cycle, and you have the first one at 29, 30, the second one at 59, 60. And sometimes the second Saturn return can be as dramatic as the first one. Sometimes it's not so much so. It all depends on how you have lived and how you're living at the time. Then there's kind of a lull, and the transits after the second Saturn return, there are fewer of these key life transits. And then when you're reading for somebody between age 60 and 80, you have to look at very specific transits. We don't need to go there, but we can if you want. All right, next. Quadrature alignments of Saturn are very important for everyone, but they're especially important for Aquarius because Aquarius is ruled by Saturn. I know most modern astrologers say that it's ruled by Uranus, but try to figure out who said that. Look it up. Who's the first person who said that Saturn is ruled by Uranus? And what about the previous, basically, thousand two two about 2,100 years of tradition holding that Saturn is the day ruler of Aquarius and the night ruler of Capricorn? If you don't understand Saturn, you don't understand Aquarius. If you don't understand Aquarius, you don't understand Saturn. And this is why I suggest using Saturn as the ruler of Aquarius. Yeah, Uranus counts. It makes a difference, but not as much as Saturn. Okay. And by the way, if you write to me at EFC at planetwaves.net and you tell me who the first person who declared Uranus the ruler of Aquarius and approximately when and what that person was famous for, I will comp you some gift from Planet Waves. EFC at planetwaves.net. Make sure that I respond. If I don't see it, if I miss you by a couple of hours, I missed it. I'm going to be very excited to get the answers to this. EFC at planetwaves.net. All right, so we're going to go through Saturn's quad alignments. That is to say, when Saturn reaches, see, I have these bent clear glasses, and they're so ridiculous, but at least you can see my eyes. All right. And they feel weird, but they work. All right. So I'm going to be again, looking at the quad alignments, personal sense of self, sense of grounding, security, and family, sense of one's relationships, and including the relationship to existence, and professional activities, action taken, praxis, the 10th house. We'll get to the meaning of these houses. Now, anybody can say things run in 7-year cycles, but if we know that we're reading with Aquarius as the reference sign, and this is why the solar chart is so powerful, if we know that we're reading with Aquarius as the reference sign, well, then we have a context for Taurus. Taurus is about grounding and sense of security. Ah, and we have reference for personal relationships. Those involve Leo. That's an interesting thing to have as your personal relationship house. It describes something about the people who come into your life and how you see them. If we know that Scorpio is the 10th, this tells us something important about the 10th. It qualifies it as being a Scorpio factor. Instead of just generically the 10th house, for Aquarius, the 10th is described by Scorpio. So here's a few examples. If you're super duper 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 old, you had Saturn pass through Aquarius from 1962 to 1964. Many of us were born, many of us listening, viewing, reading, were born in that era, that very special early 1960s time that included the Kennedy assassination and the Beatles coming to the United States. Saturn in Aquarius, 62 to 64, approximately. I'm giving 2-year ranges. Saturn has a 30-month, approximately 30 months in each sign. So if you want to get more refined, we either have to work together or you've got to learn to read an ephemeris. All right, next, Saturn in Taurus, 1969 to 1972. Question: what was going on with family at that time in your life? What was up with your father at that time in your life? Did you move house? Stuff related to grounding and security. Next, Saturn in Leo, 75 to 77. That question is generally, where were you at? Where did you live? And what was the story of your personal relationships at that time? Next, Saturn in Scorpio, 82 to 85. So here we have Saturn going over the quote unquote top of the solar chart. The house of action in the world, the house of reputation in the world. So this is often considered the career house, but if in ancient astrology, if you check out the book Whole Sign Houses by Rob Hand, which I can send you if you request it, I will send you the PDF. This is the house of praxis. That's the Greek word for action. The 10th is where we take action. It's not just, Michael Luton a couple of years ago in the conversation said, oh no, the 10th house is what people want to be known for. Well, maybe that's true, but if you go back to the early interpretation and the creation of that house, you find out the 10th is the house of action. You are not only want to be known for something, you're willing to act on that thing. All right, next, Saturn then returns to your sign in 1991 to 93. This is different than the Saturn return, but similar. When Saturn comes back to your sign, that's a form of a Saturn return. It's not the return of Saturn to its natal position at age 29 or 59, but it is a point of return and embarkation, reset, reinitiation. All right, next, Saturn was back in Taurus from 98 to 2000. That was a very exciting time, a little too exciting for some people, especially 01. But that was the Y2K era. Saturn was in Taurus. I've got a fabulous article about Saturn in Taurus. I can't remember the name, but it's one of my best early Planet Waves articles about Saturn in Taurus and the Saturn-Jupiter conjunction in Taurus. So this happened in about 2000. So, what was going on in 2000? Very important year for everyone, but also very important year for anyone on the fixed cross. That's you. Next, Saturn was back in Leo, your relationship angle in 05 to 07. Where were you? And what were you doing 05 to 07? Next, Saturn was back at the top of your chart in Scorpio, way at the top, the house of praxis, the house of taking action and reputation and what you want to be known for, but the action that you're willing to take to make that happen. Then finally, last and probably least, Saturn returned to Aquarius from 2020 to 2023. This one really threw me for a loop. Saturn in Aquarius is one of the great things in astrology, but it happened that during the last Saturn in Aquarius, 2020 to 2023, 4.4 billion people were locked out of work, out of school, told to stay home, and the entire world economy was shut down. Though that was not a good thing, I doubt that it saved a single life and probably killed a great many people by locking them out of medical procedures and they're away from their friends and family, and patients with dementia had no contact with others and had no company over an alleged pathogen that can only be found by a computer. The power of Saturn in Aquarius was indicated by the world being locked down and the economy being shut down from 2020 plus, and we're still dealing with the after effects of it. We might say that there are a few things in astrology as daunting and as powerful as Saturn in Aquarius, and that was the tool, sadly, that was used for this insane, irrational, inhumane, ungodly oppression of the human race for profit and control. 2020 to 2023. Next. So take your time with these. Take your time with these. That's why I've given them to you as a list. And my commentary may help or it may confuse matters, but by time, I mean like months or a week or two or a month. Get a loose leaf notebook so you can take the pages in and out and rearrange them. Print this stuff, hit it with a three-hole punch, and print your chart and punch that. And print the blank wheel and get in the habit of taking notes on the blank wheel just for fun. All right. Now, there have been a number of Chiron transits to the fixed signs in recent years. The first is the discovery era of Chiron. That's 1976 to 1983. So 76 to 83, 76. Yeah. That's 7 years. Chiron and Taurus. That makes sense. There's always an important date for Chiron's discovery, November 1st, 1977. That too will have indicated Chiron hanging out in your fourth house. By the way, I forgot to say, the reason we're doing all this is because you're having such an important transit of Pluto through your sign, maybe making you nervous. And in that case, or not, it will help to know what transits are, how they work, how they feel. We're going to get to the last two in a second, then I'm going to tell you quite a bit about Pluto and Aquarius. All right, next. So Chiron and Taurus, 76 to 83, the discovery era and the activation of astrologers on the topic, and also the discovery itself, 11-1-77. That's an important date for almost everyone. Next, Chiron was in Leo for only 2 years, two and a half years. Notice took a long time, 7 years to go through Taurus. Then it whips through Leo in just 2 years, 91 to 93. Then about 18 months for Virgo and another 18 months for Libra. If you have a lot of planets there, that'll tell you something, but let's just stick with the fixed cross. Finally, next, not finally. Chiron in Scorpio, 1996 through 1999. So anytime something goes over the top of the chart, for example, in Scorpio, please, how do we do this? There'll be likely to be interesting action professionally. Goes through Leo, the emphasis is going to be on relationships. Goes through Taurus, the emphasis will be on home, structure, security, and goes through Aquarius, the emphasis is going to be on your personal evolution, your relationship to yourself. So Chiron and Leo, 1991 to 1993, that's opposite your sun. And there's, you know, there's going to be some interesting story. Start with the address. And I'm curious your relationship scenarios at that time. Then Chiron is in Scorpio, 96 to 99, right ahead of Y2K, right ahead of the 9/11 era. And there is something here about pumping up your professional mojo in some way. What was that about? Starting with, what was your address? Finally, Chiron and Aquarius from, which is left and which is right, from 05 to 10, fairly recently, but it started 20 years ago. Wow, it just seems like 15 minutes ago the Chiron was in Aquarius. But that was 05 to 10. And so there's likely to be some kind of fundamental reevaluation of who you are and what your life is about. Chiron is now in Aries. I covered that extensively in somewhere in between. I will, when I read this chart, I'll tell you a little bit more about it. I'm going to go through these planets again, all for where they are today. Okay, so that covers Chiron's quadrature alignments to your sun or your rising, or what was generally the, I'm going to slouch on video here, not the usual thing to do. Video looks good when you sit up all perky with your boobs out, pointed forward, you know, but I'm going to take 3 minutes and slouch. All right, next, there were two transits to Aquarius that really matter now, that really tell us something about the times that we are in now. The first of those was Uranus was in Aquarius from 95 through 2003, approximately 7+ year phase. About, it looks like about 8 years. There's a little margin on either side where it fades in and fades out. So that's an important time. What was that about? This overlaps, again, 95 through 03. This overlaps with Chiron, with Neptune in Aquarius from 98 through 2011. And Neptune overlaps with Chiron in Aquarius from 2005 to 2010. So basically what was going on is between 2005, no, 95 through 05, 20 years, there were big, important, Chiron's not big, but it's energetically very big, gods of change type planets in Aquarius during that era, 20 years. So you have a lot of practice for Pluto in Aquarius. You have practice adjusting to the kinds of pattern shifts that this is about. Now, I've done very little interpreting so far. I'm just working with the mechanics of the chart. But the thing is that when you start to follow the mechanics of the chart, when you start to look at the transits and start to understand the structure of time, you don't need so much interpretation coming from the chart. Oh, that's what that means. Oh, that must have happened then. But rather, when you're working with transit events, time itself tells the story. And you start to see that there are that there is symmetry to this process. It's not, it doesn't happen to you. There's symmetry to it. Things make sense in a way that they might not ordinarily. And there's always the important question of, who seemed to act? Did you seem to take the action that precipitated events in your life, or did the universe seem to act and you responded to those events in your life? So that's certainly worth pondering for every one of these transits. Okay, so that's more or less the end of part one. At the bottom of this thing, right before the blank wheel, and print a lot of these and keep them handy, is the reference to the 2022 ebook Planets in Motion. If you click on that PDF, it is printable, and you will see that there are all kinds of ideas about transits at the beginning of the essay. It's about 80 pages, but the first 5 pages talk about transits. You may fall in love with transits from this and realize, ah, this is makes it actually very easy to read. Because pro tip, when Chiron goes over a planet in your chart, you will get an idea what that planet is about, because Chiron tends to shine a light and bring a kind of revelation around whatever it touches. Okay, and Chiron is in a very important house for Aquarius right now, house 3, your mind. All right, so here's current solar chart. So here's part two. Let's talk about what Aquarius is. And it is getting warm in here where I'm getting worked up. So let's drop a layer. I'm still in wearing 3 layers inside. It really is not necessary. Okay. The most important thing to recognize about Aquarius, besides that it's ruled by Saturn, is that Aquarius is at once the sign of groups and also the sign of pattern formation. The overlap is social pattern formation. Part of pattern formation involves electricity. Aquarius has a lot to do with electricity, and it has a lot to do with inventions, and it has a lot to do with digital technology. From the standpoint of the technology and its effects on groups, the other side of the Aquarius coin is Aries. I have written some brilliant stuff on the Aries Aquarius connection, especially the essay Aquarian Era for Cancer. Why for Cancer? I don't know. That's where I chose to do the most contrast between Aquarius and Aries. And this contrast is very meaningful for you right now. So your sign, supposed to be the sign associated with peace and love, really actually Aquarians are tend toward more serious people, more intellectually oriented. Pisces is more of the sign of peace and love and good times and naked women and stuff like this. Aquarius is more about the structure and the function of things, and it's more about group organization, and it's more about collaboration. And there's also an element of social control to Aquarius as an archetype. I mean, if Saturn in Aquarius from 2020 to 2023 doesn't tell you that there's a very, very, very controlling side of Aquarius, I don't think anything could possibly ever convince anyone. The biggest control drama in the history of the world took place with Saturn in Aquarius. It kind of started to go away when Saturn was out of Aquarius. Pluto is coming. Pluto is here, and it's still got 30 degrees to cover, which it's going to do in 20 years. As Paul Simon said, your life is made of patterns, and it is not easy to change those patterns. It's not easy to shift patterns once they form, especially if they're formed in the context and the framework of Aquarius. So Pluto is here to change that. And I've described several different possible scenarios of Pluto and Aquarius. One of them is the groups become more cult-like and more powerful and more zealous. I mean, every time I turn around, I've got someone trying to convince me the world is flat. Like, yeah, but You haven't been doing all these calculations and observations for 30 years. You don't do jack shit with the zodiac or the solar system. Why do you even care? But this absolutely comedic flat Earth cult is always trying to convince me the planet is some kind of a pancake. But it's a cult. And I think the fundamental unit of social organization in the Pluto and Aquarius era, one of them is likely to be the cult. It kind of always was that in American history, but let's see. The second thing is individuals standing up to pressure of some kind. The few people with steely resolve who don't want to be told what to do, especially if it makes absolutely no fucking sense whatsoever. So in one scenario, the group acts on the individual and tries to hammer down that nail. In another scenario, the nail keeps popping up and insists on getting noticed. That's not the world's best metaphor, but to those who don't like dissent, the nail sticking up out of the floor may be a good metaphor, but there's little other purpose to that, and there is a very important purpose to dissent. So Pluto and Aquarius will encourage and empower a level of dissent, but make sure that it's not contrarianism. Aquarius has that side to it that is contrarian, but that's not that useful. It's not actually responsive and not actually rebellious. You want to do better than being contrarian. I'm going to have the opposite view just because that's the view that I feel like having. No, you want a rational, solid basis for your dissent. All right, part three, group initiation. This is tricky. And I still don't have very many examples of not only group initiation that involved the group in part of its expression, not only group initiation that lasted for 3 years or for 1 weekend, but rather group initiation that has been sustained and got lasting, productive results in the world and in the lives of other people. And we're going to see this. We're going to see this for what it is. If there are any students of Blavatsky or of Bailey, Alice A, please, and you know where the best passages on group initiation are. I think there's a whole book about it. Please write to me, and let's have a conversation. Maybe for Planet Waves FM. So I'm still looking for good examples of group initiation, where the group made a choice to grow. Now, this normally happens under extreme duress in families and in communities. It happens when there's a tragedy. It happens when there's a disaster, but not always. Sometimes tragedy shatters people. Sometimes disaster shatters people, but sometimes something bad happens, and then the group says, okay, we have to respond to this in a mature way. And by the way, all of these Saturn transits that I went through, one of the themes of Saturn is the structure of your life and your maturing process. That will perhaps kind of give you a some themes to work with. So Pluto's coming. Pluto's here, but really it's coming. And we have yet to see the kind of dramas that this is going to instigate. Now, one interesting thing that I wrote about in an article available for free at planetwaves.eu, in case you're not a subscriber, just go to planetwaves.eu. And it's called something like, what's it called? Planet Waves. It is right on the front page at this moment, Breaking Consensus, the first real-time test of Pluto and Aquarius. So one of the things that Aquarius can do is can hold and form consensus, which is a form of a pattern. And consensus is really only good under one condition, when it's based on shared values. When the consensus of the group violates the values of some individuals, the consensus was not properly formed. So the way to properly form a consensus is to first have a conversation about values and priorities. Then it's easy to know where to go. And maybe part of, you know, the group initiation is going to be gaining an actual understanding of consensus, because consensus is usually used to suppress dissent, and it's also used to create consensus reality, which is kind of like hypnosis or group think. And I hope this becomes very uncomfortable for everyone under Pluto in Aquarius, where people just get sick of being told what to think and what to believe. Okay, another major transit that you're having is Saturn in the second place. Saturn, ruling planet of Aquarius, second place, money house, values house, strong preferences, how you feel about yourself, your self-esteem. This is going to be very helpful because you've had Neptune here kind of watering down your sense of your own belonging on the planet. You've had many years of kind of a nebulous approach to self-esteem described by Neptune. Now Saturn's arrived, and what Saturn is talking about is forming some boundaries and cleaning up the edges, and getting very serious about money. Saturn will be in Pisces for as long as Neptune is, and then in 2025, the two of them move into Aries together. And by the way, you're going to notice that most of the things I'm reading are on the bottom half of the chart, and that will cover almost all the necessary topics, because there's so much concentration between the signs, basically Aquarius and Cancer. So Aries are Aquarians all have an idea of themselves as being highly intelligent, and Aquarians also have a value on their own ideas. Now you could say, oh, well, that's just what Aquarius is, but the genius of the solar chart is that it talks about how that manifests in other ways. So what I have found in reading and working with the solar chart as my first astrological tool, starting 30 years ago, incredibly, is where Aries is located tells you a lot about the nature of the sign. And by that I mean that for Aquarius, Aries is located in the third place. So let's pretend we were reading for Sagittarius, and that was the ascendant. Well, Aries would be in the fifth place. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Ah, this is very different to have Aries in place 3 versus Aries in place 5. That's almost as big of a difference as you can get in astrology. The whole orientation changes. For you, Aries is in house 3, the house of ideas, the house of communication, the house of your mental approach, the house of your communication style, and ideation. That's not clear from all of the above. And so with Aries in the third, your sense of being and belonging and identity is going to be lodged in your ideas. That's wonderful. And it means you have a lot of ideas. Just be sure that you bring flexibility with you to your process of ideation, and that you are not so totally over-identified with your ideas that you feel like you're going to die if you're wrong. Big fucking deal. Part of having ideas is having the next idea. Part of having ideas is being wrong. Frankly, part of being a journalist is being wrong. My goal is to be wrong before the article gets in the newspaper. You don't want your friend Cindy telling you you were wrong after the article got the newspaper. You want to work with your best intelligent friend before. And in that process, in that formative process, argue all the sides. Make sure you're arguing all the sides and that you can be like a good lawyer, a law student in moot court, where you can flip a coin. Now you're on the defense, now you're on the prosecution, flip a coin, have the same trial the next day, and suddenly you're on the prosecution and the other side's on the defense. You've got to be able to be a little bit nimble with your ideas, and again, not be overly identified. Now, Chiron is here. There may be some kind of a critical mass point of your ideas and also of your assessment of your own intelligence. A lot of people over they overestimate their intelligence. It's great if you want to be cocky, and people are not that bright generally, and it's very easy to convince somebody that you're smarter than they are. First thing you do is make them feel stupid. That's easy. And then you bamboozle them with four-syllable words, and that's like, wow, you've topped them. But it doesn't make you right. It doesn't make you smart. It doesn't make your ideas useful. So Chiron is raising all that to question, and Chiron is saying, well, it's time for an assessment, and maybe it's time to admit that that concept wasn't working that well. And just because viruses can only be shown to exist by a computer doesn't mean that the world is flat or that the sun goes around the earth, right? You've got to follow logic with the third house, and you've got to know the steps that led to the idea and what steps lead from the idea. Now, a lot of emphasis is coming to this house. It's going to be a Saturn-Neptune conjunction, for one thing, in 25. And in that same era, there's going to be a conjunction of Chiron and Eris. And one of the things to do here in the digital world is, let's see if I've got an example here. Ah, and it's a good one. The digital world has fucked our minds up, and it has messed up our sense of self, and it's messed up our intellectual orientation. One of the things to do in the digital era is to read books, especially books by Marshall McLuhan. They're not easy. Black guy in the back. White guy in the front. Reading from books changes reading. By the way, it's why I make the effort to put my readings onto PDFs and books like Planets in Motion in a PDF. Read on paper and behold the mighty pencil. Take notes, scribble in the margins, make what you read your own. Take possession of ideas inwardly. Okay, next place. Next place is Taurus. So here, there's a major event in 2023 coming up in the spring, 4/4/4/2024. And that is the conjunction of Jupiter and Uranus. Jupiter, 1,200 times the size of the Earth. Uranus, maybe 500 times the size of the Earth. Pretty damn big. Ice giant and Uranus, gas giant and Jupiter. The two of them are going to line up for their once per 13-year conjunction on April 20th. And by the way, that follows by 12 days a major solar eclipse in Aries. So there's going to be the month of April is going to be absolutely astounding and astonishing. And there's one event in your third house, ideas. Ideation, identifying with your ideas, a major event in the fourth house. What makes you feel safe? Ah, well, there's potentially a conflict there because one of the things that makes people feel safe is not changing. But both of these things are about changing. And the one in Aries, the eclipse conjunct Chiron is about changing your mind. And the one in Taurus, Jupiter conjunct Uranus, is about changing something significant in your physical environment. 12 days. April is going to be astounding. It's going to be a springtime of the ages. And so, with the Jupiter Uranus conjunction, consider where you live and whether it works for you. This can be the building you're in, obviously, that's a first start. And second, the region that you're in, that's very Jupiterian. Jupiter always wants you to take a long view and consider really your sense of place in the larger sense of that. All right. Next is there is a major transit from Taurus to Gemini, and that is Sedna. Can't say enough about this. I've covered it in almost every Somewhere in Between reading, many of them in the audio and the video, but let's talk about it again. So, Sedna last entered Gemini, if the astrophysicists have this right, 11,400 years ago. That either means that there was a glacier going up about 1 mile where I'm sitting, or Lake Iroquois had recently burst, and there was a kind of a raging river 50 miles or 100 or miles wide going all the way down to New York Harbor, completely engulfing the entire Hudson Valley and what is now New York City, and creating the British Isles. That was a long time ago. No one wrote things down back then, or if they did, it all got washed away. So we don't really know anything about Sedna in Gemini, but we know that Sedna is about the environment generally. This is a consensus forming among astrologers, I think, gently over 20 years, and I think it's a pretty good starting point. But when we put Sedna in Gemini, the shift is from the physical environment to the mental environment. And the mental environment is the most important environment, because the mental environment is the environment that controls your perception of yourself and of the rest of the environment. Right? What do you have without your perceptions? So if you're going to fix something or work in a certain territory, your perceptions are a very important place to work. And here we have Sedna entering a very dynamic and creative zone of your chart, which is Gemini. Gemini is the house for you, house five, place five, of pleasure, fun, taking risks, doing things that children like to do, and having sex in the manner of teenagers for fun and exploration. And in the case of adults, on the art studio couch and not in the marital bed. The fifth is where you fuck for fun somewhere and not for any sense of commitment, obligation to pay a debt or anything like that. It's just about fun. And it's not coincidentally the house of art. And art requires taking a risk. Art is what you do when you probe your environment and take a risk. The art of Aquarius, yet another picture of the mental and idea-oriented nature of your sign, is you have a very idea-oriented sign on the fifth place of creativity, that is Gemini. Ah, this means for you, ideas should be creative. They should be fun. They are relational. And there's no idea like a daring idea. And what you have is here, I'm thinking out loud, I'm stuttering. What you have is a situation where you get to be a probe into the mental environment. So you basically get to insert yourself. It's a lot of what you see me doing. I'm very Aquarius. Aquarius moon. Should be wearing my Aquarius moon t-shirt, but I don't have one. And the use of your own mental senses, your projects, your ideas, social media posts as probes. Ah, this is a great use of it to find out what people are thinking, to experiment and to test the water. and make art and have fun and relate to people in a saucy and romantic way. Yes, even you can do that. All right, let's do one last house major. I may mention the seventh, but maybe not, because we've been going on for a long time here. Sixth house is the house of work and well-being. And usually work and well-being are two different things, and people don't really like what they do and where they work and all this stuff. You have the sign Cancer. Your solar house, solar chart, has the sign Cancer on the sixth solar house. Well, obvious, that says take care of yourself. Obviously, that says either work at home or make your workspace homey and cozy. So my home is upstairs. I've got a lot of Aquarius in my chart. I maybe go a little too far on the make your workspace cozy, because then I don't leave. But you want your workspace to have a kitchen. You want your workspace to have a couch or a cot so you can take a nap at work. Very important. You want your workspace to be homey. Ideally, Aquarius would have a way of working at home. This has become a more accepted thing in the gig economy. It would have been unheard of 10 or 20 years ago to the extent that it's heard of today. Plus, they locked us all out. And then they have a heart attack when someone claims to be an independent contractor. That's another story. But there must be some overlap of work and home, if only proximity, but absolutely your workplace itself must be a bit plush. I know this goes against the concept of Aquarius having like wires running everywhere, but no. Not so much. That is a potentially untrue stereotype. And yes, if you had an electrical workshop or workshop, I'm sure there would be wires running everywhere. And, you know, nobody loves a gadget like an Aquarius, but you have Taurus on the fourth, your home. Feed that tree. Live around a lot of natural fibers and, you know, wood and substances and stone and things like that. And you have Cancer on the sixth. You want to work in a cozy place. Like ideally there'd be like a massage room in your office, and the massage therapist would come in once a week and not only bring the portable table. No, there's already a massage table there to work on. Another crucial thing right now is shifting your orientation from work, from a matter of survival to a matter of thriving. Your work must nourish you, and with Cancer on the sixth, your work must nourish the people around you. How am I doing? Let's do the last house. I may have to do something about the ninth, but let's say Leo, worth a mention. Varuna, what is this little VA in the VA hospital? It's Varuna. I put it in every chart. I'm surprised nobody asked me what is all this stuff? Like, what's that little VA? I publish these charts like hundreds a year. And no one says, what's that thing? What's that thing doing up there in the 10th house? That's Apollon in Scorpio. Very good for business. Very good for commerce and trade. Especially if your commerce and trade is yourself, which it should be because you have Aries on the third. The house of commerce and trade specifically is the third, Mercury, Hermes. In the temple to Hermes at Delos, the businessmen would all hang out and chit-chat and make deals right in the temple to Hermes. It was closed off. I really wanted to go down there and hang out. But instead I got to the Temple of Aphrodite and kiss a beautiful woman on Beltane of 2005 on the island of Delos. Okay, so what's Varuna doing in the seventh? Well, Varuna in the seventh is saying, hang out with people who you see as equals. And I think the most important part of Varuna in the seventh is to conduct yourself with people who keep their promises, for whom contracts are sacred. Really, you only have two choices when you make a contract. Three, you fulfill your commitment, you default, or you request an amendment to the contract, including being let out of it. With Varuna Seventh in Leo, your equals are the people who share your value of keeping contracts. And when Varuna is active, you too must keep your contracts and keep your promises, because there are extra consequences for not doing so. And there kind of should be. We're taking things a little too fast and loose here in the 21st century, where everyone thinks, I can treat all my clients like shit, because after all, there's always more clients. Every day someone gets internet access. There's a sucker born every minute. Now, not so much. You want your concept of equality and peerage, your concept of who and what is a peer, to be about commitment. Should be anyway. And by commitment, I mean who keeps their promises. You? They? Someone doesn't keep their promises, you don't want them around. If you don't really inspire to keep your promises to others, maybe there's something in the relationship that you don't want. Let's skip the eighth and go one last comment on Logos in the ninth, and we'll end on that happy note. Logos in the ninth, right there. So everyone has a part of their brain that's religious. Everyone has a place they see connection to the universe, religios, to reconnect. And for you, it's relational. And for you, it is about beauty. Again, contrary to the ideas of Aquarius, where you might say, the only good coffee cup is an ugly coffee cup. Well, no, not so much. With Libra on the ninth, God manifests to you through beauty. That's interesting. And Libra also has a sense of aesthetics. That's a kind of beauty. Balance, that's a kind of attribute of beauty. But the planet Logos is there. Logos is in the first group beyond the group that orbits with Pluto. So in the Kuiper Belt, there's the group that orbits with Pluto, which have approximately orbits of 250 years, and quite a few of them that have resonance to Neptune. But the next group out, the orbits are 50 years longer approximately, and they range from about 295 to about 310. Those are called classical Kuiper objects, or Cubiwanos. They're named for gods and goddesses of creation. And one of them is Logos. And Logos is about logic and the word and a kind of a sensibility. A good book for you to read would be Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. If you have not had the exquisite pleasure, slug it out through page 75. It goes a little slow going. You do not know what the book is about before page 75, and I'm not going to tell you, but it addresses the matter of ethics and values, absolutely, but also aesthetics and the tangibility of ideas. And this is all Logos in Libra. And this is a dependable point of spiritual contact, spiritual community, and of, let's say, aspiration to being more than you are. We all need something to reach for. We all need something to aspire to. And Logos in the ninth is saying, well, let's just make that the beautiful and meaningful use of words and of ideas. Such an Aquarian theme, especially in your charts this year at this time. Okay, so there are other houses. We've got the main point here. Below this reading on the page are many past readings. You can go back, check my work, and review your life. So too is this this transit finder thing and the chart. I'm only going to put the hand-drawn chart That's it. I hope to see you as a client or as a reader of the horoscope column. And I'm curious your response to this new style, more astrologically intensive astrology studio with lights, camera, and action. And as you can see, hair, wardrobe, and makeup. Signing off from Planet Wave's office in Kingston, New York. Love from your Aquarius moon astrologer. Thank you for your business and trust. Bye for now.